LuxJam, combining Linux news with Creative Commons goodness.
Hello and welcome to TuxJam episode 31. And this is a special edition of TuxJam for HPR, Hacker Public Radio, which I've been listening to quite a bit recently. So hello to all the HPR folks, and hello to my co-host, Kevy. How are you tonight, Kevy?
Hello, hello, and a big hello to everybody actually out at the HPR listeners. So I think this is maybe the second or possibly even third TuxJam that's gone out in HPR, but to be fair, we didn't actually acknowledge it in the last one because it was a bit of an afterthought. So if you actually think, yeah, I'm liking this, then please be feel free to become a regular listener to the show. The more the merrier. We're quite happy. Yes, I am well tonight. How are you tonight, Andrew?
Yes, I'm fine, yes. I'm quite full of excitement about various open sourcey type things that I've encountered in the last week. But to begin with, shall we do our usual roundup of obscure distros on DistroWatch?
Yes, why not? And one of my favourite obscure distros, although to be fair, it's not actually that obscure anymore, and that is Tails, because it seems to be becoming well known for a fairly small distro. I've used this quite a few times. Now, for those who don't know, Tails is, it's a live CD. I actually think the last time I tried it, which was only about 2 months ago, but I think the last time I tried it, it was still on a live CD, but there was an option to install it, which to me personally made a lot of the stuff that was maybe very positive about it for security and features, etc. I thought that kind of might well have, like I said, nullified that if you were to actually install it as your main base. It's based on Debian Stable, and boy, you, it really is based on Debian Stable. I'm pretty sure the last time I had it, it was still not even Mate, or Mate, whichever one you want to call it. It was GNOME 2 that was the actual desktop, so it certainly did feel like it was one back in the good old days. But yeah, I must admit, for all my live CDs, it really is one of my favourites. Big emphasis on security, everything, you know, Tor, everything's set up by default. Actually, to be honest, the one thing I've not tried on it is the mail. I don't know if mail encryption is, and things like that are set up by default. And I didn't try to put in any emails through the... Oh, no, I can't even remember. Was the likes of Thunderbird or anything, did it come with it?
Oh, I've not tried Tails, so I'm not sure. I don't know what mail client it has. It seems to come with Firefox, Ice Weasel, so... Is it not Thunderbird? It's the mail client? Maybe not. I don't know.
I don't know. I just can't remember. But if you haven't actually tried, then, like I said, I would highly recommend if you're fancying a live CD, if you want a bit of extra security, then go for it.
Okay, yes, I must look into that one. The first on the list of DistroWatch today, the 20th of March, as I look at it, is something called Web Converger, which I've not heard of before, and it's a Linux distro, Debian-based. I think it might be Debian Stable from what it says, although I'm not entirely sure. But the interesting thing is it only has one application, and that's Firefox. It's essentially a web kiosk version of it. And this is Web Converger 24, and it's 3 months since the release of Web Converger 23, and I wonder, no, the 23 that doesn't refer to the Firefox version, because the Firefox version is very recent, it's 28. So that's quite interesting. I did try to use it earlier today. I loaded a live ISO into VirtualBox, and it promptly crashed and didn't load up. And in fact, my laptop crashed shortly thereafter, which I don't think it's ever done before. I don't know if it was related to Web Converger, so I don't want to malign its name with my bad experience there. But I like the sound of it, and it seems like they're trying to make a business out of it and charge support. You can use it for free, but if you're a commercial customer and they mention a Swiss bank or something was using it, then you can pay for support for it. So a nice open source type model.
Yeah, take note, please, British banks who are still running XP, you know. I think this would be a great idea for you to move over now, and what better thing than something that's free but you just pay for support? Yeah, I like that, but mind you, it does seem a bit dubious that it's free but pay for support, and you tried it and it crashed the machine twice. call me a conspiracy theorist, huh?
Indeed. My machine actually only crashed once. It crashed VirtualBox both times. just to make sure I'm being fair to the distribution.
Oh, well, fair enough. Now, there's one here that appeared, and to be quite honest, I'd rather annoyed it appeared so quickly, because I only downloaded a slightly older version of this last week, and it's Sparky Linux. And Sparky Linux, it's the one that's been released this time has been Mate, XFCE, and a base version. Now, it's based on Debian testing, and they have a heck of a lot of desktop environments that you can actually do. I don't think they've got like an ultimate DVD. It does seem to want you to download whichever one you want. But I haven't actually gone around to trying it yet. But one of the things from looking through the website is that they really do put an awful lot of time and effort into presentation. The stuff looks really nice. At times, maybe a wee bit too Mac-ish for my liking. It seems to rely on docs in just about every one of their versions that I've seen. But it certainly does look highly polished. And I'm quite looking forward to actually trying this out and seeing what it's like.
Yeah, Sparky Linux is a new one on me. I've never heard of it before, let alone tried it. And it's another Debian-based distribution, Mate XFCE. And OpenBox as a lightweight starting point edition. Yeah, I think that's something I may give a go. The one that caught my eye a few days ago, 17th of March, St. Patrick's Day, although I don't think it's got anything Irish about it, was the release of TinyCore, or PiCore, because it's a TinyCore Linux for the Raspberry Pi. Now, if you've not come across TinyCore before, it's I think it's the successor of Damn Small Linux, and I played around with it a few years ago quite extensively, and I really did enjoy using it. It's not something that I really can see myself using day to day, but you know, I see it, since it's so lightweight and so tiny, I can really see it being a useful way to build up a very lean, Lightbone system on a Raspberry Pi. I haven't tried it out yet, but I think I will, because I've got a Raspberry Pi, of course, have a play around with that and maybe report in the future Tux Jam about my experiences.
Yeah, I've got a spare Raspberry Pi actually sitting right beside me at the minute, so that could be something to try out. I've never tried TinyCore, to be honest, but the one thing that people who I've often spoken to have tried it, they all say about how surprised they are with actually how much you can do on it. They're expecting just a log into a graphical environment with pretty much nothing. But, everybody always says that. No, I'm pleasantly surprised by it. So, like I said, not one I've ever tried, but I remember somebody else saying that it's, if you want to learn about Linux, then it's a good one to be on. But given by that point I'd already built up my Gentoo system, I thought I can't be bothered going back and learning a whole new way to do it.
Yeah, no, it's a good point actually, because I think it attracted me because I felt it had similarities with Slackware. It was very simple, and part of the reason it was simple is that really it was the product of a very small team, like Slackware. In fact, you could even argue Slackware's still just one person, although I think that's pushing it a bit far. I forget the name of the chap, Robert Shingledecker. What a great name, Robert Shingledecker. I'll say that again. So he was the brains behind it. And I think he's not been terribly well all the way through the development. But I do feel that it's the opposite end of the spectrum to Debian, for example, where it's a big democratic team. It's a small, tight team with TinyCore Linux, and that gives it a character which appealed to me.
Yes, indeed. Now then, the only other one that really kind of caught my eye was one that I've seen before, and I don't know why. I've always kind of fancied it, but I've just never got around to it. And it's a Slackware-based one, and it's Porteus. And this is one that, like I said, it's kind of caught my eye. I've never tried it. It always seems to come with a plentiful supply of desktop environments, you know, because you seem to be able to get LXD, KDE, and Mate or Mate and XFC. It's because it always seems to have quite a wide variety, and it's something that I must admit, I always actually wanted to try, but it's just been on my to-do list. You know, probably a bit like a BSD. It's on my to-do list, and I haven't quite written it off yet. It's just something I haven't gotten around to.
No, I've never tried Porteous either, but I couldn't help noticing that there was a sudden run of Slackware-based distributions. So there was Slackle on the 8th of March, and then there was Porteous released on the 11th, and the day after, on the 12th, there was the Slacko edition of Puppy Linux. So I don't really know why that would have been the case, because there hasn't been a Slackware release all that recently. I suppose Flat 14.1 came up fairly recently, but then Slacko Puppy says it's built from Slackware 14.0, which I don't understand, because that's not the latest release. Anyway, I'm glad to see that people are still building on top of Slackware. I can see the value in that, since I like Slackware, obviously. So, but yeah, Porteous is one that I'd like to have a look at as well.
Well, what I always found interesting was it really is highly customizable. It's not one that when you just go and download the image, you actually go and you click on the download page, and it's almost like it's a semi-build. So, like, the first thing it'll ask you is, what architecture do you want, 64, 32? Do you want a GUI, or do you just want a console only, you know, a text? And then it says, right, select your desktop. Now, with a desktop, there's actually, I didn't notice, this has been added since the last time I looked, it's actually got Razer QT, so I'd be interested in trying out their implementation of that. And then you're going further down, you know, it even asks you, right, what things like web browsers do you want? You know, do you want multiple, just want one? What word processors, etc. So, you know, I'm quite interested with all that, just because it's something that's going to be different each time. It's not something that's the same, you know, just a standard off the shelf. There's your token packages. There you go.
Yeah, that is quite an interesting approach. So you get to do your choices before you even do the download.
Yeah, it's like asks you to build. It's in fact, if you want to go to, it's build.porteous.org, and it's from there you can actually decide how much or how little you want, and it at the bottom it'll even tell you you know, current ISO size. So it's, you know, even if you want to say, well, I'd like to keep it on a DVD or keep it on a CD, sorry, rather than a DVD, or I want to keep it under 500 megs. I'm a bit short of settings this month. So, you know, it's short of bandwidth this month. Then you can do that. So this is what really appealed to me, I must admit. But it's just one of those things I have not gotten round to doing, to be honest.
Well, if you're ever feeling a bit short of settings, of course you should try the KDE edition of Porteous, and I'm sure you won't feel short anymore.
Ah, that's very true. Although, to be honest, have you ever honestly in your life felt short of settings as a Linux user? I think we have plenty of settings that can keep us occupied between now and doomsday.
I have to say, having used Unity on Ubuntu for a wee while, I am feeling slightly short in settings. It's not quite as settingful as KDE was. Anyway, on that note, shall we go to our first tune?
Yes, indeed. And this is one that I got, and I have to thank Jamstreamer for, because it played me this at random the other day, and I really liked it. And this is Tamara Laurel with the song Sweet.
Screaming, and I've been crawling after you. I've been saying that I don't need it, but damn it, I still do. But you don't know how that makes how it go, and I how sweet it'd be. steady all this time. You've been acting so apathetic, boy. Damn it, I'm on fire. And
welcome back, and now we're going to have a little account of Kevy's experience making some video tutorials. I've just watched one of the videos just now, and actually it was not only informative but entertaining, I would say, as well. So of course we'll put the link in the show notes. The videos are on Vimeo for your if you're viewing it now or at some later date. But Kevy, would you like to tell us a little bit about what you did?
Yes, well, you said last time let's have something that plays to our strengths, and I thought, well, to be honest, you know, Minecraft really isn't going to be that good for a Geeks podcast. So I thought, yeah, fair enough. I can't really just kind of do it. I was thinking about doing a Minecraft Let's Play, and I thought, oh my word, they've been done to death, to be honest. So I actually was thought, right, one of the things that we do in school is we do a project, and it's just basically the kids make up a totally new film. So to do that, they essentially take some actors' faces, cut out the background, and then put them in different scenarios. And one of the problems is you've got teachers there who, you know, they still basically remember using the slate to write on. And, you know, the computers are still an evil thing, but it's part of the curriculum now. So one of the things that we've got to do is they've got to be able to teach the kids how to take out the background using GIMP. And one of the things I'm always getting is, will you come in and teach that? So I thought, right, I'm going to make up a tutorial on how to do this. And that saves me the effort of having to run through this each and every time. So this was very much a kind of practical as well as entertainment and for Tux Jam purposes. This was very much a practical thing. So to start with, obviously the tutorial is on GIMP. And I uploaded it to Vimeo just purely because I think Google have enough of our data as it is without adding more to YouTube. So you don't have to have a Vimeo account or anything to watch it. You can just click on the links. Links that'll be in the show notes. And the first thing I used was a very simple program, and it's called GTK Record My Desktop. Now, there really isn't an awful lot of settings you can actually do in this. It is just pretty much a record button or a pause button. The only things you can do are record with or without sound. You can increase the frame rate, but that's pretty much it. Or you can choose to actually record the whole thing, the whole screen, or just a part of it. I found the part of it bit a wee bit fiddly to use. The first actual problem I encountered was default settings. I tried it and it was blank. The video worked, but the sound was completely blank. Nothing there at all. And a wee bit of work on that, but all it actually is, it's because it seems to have been pre-pulse audio, so it's got different settings. And so all you've got to do is just go into your settings, and for sound settings, it's actually very simple. All you've got to do is take out the word sound and put in the word pulse. So that was the rather annoying feature I had to work around. I was quite surprised, really, that this wasn't either part of it or part of like an initial setup. What do you use? Alsa, Jack, Pulse, whatever. So that was a bit annoying. But apart from that, it did actually work very seamlessly. It popped up initially with a wee window. And when you hit the record, the window completely disappeared. And it puts it into the taskbar, which just essentially you click on to either pause the recording or completely stop the recording. So, to be honest, that was actually very simple, straightforward, apart from the sound issue. And the one good thing about Record My Desktop was that everything was done in open format. So the sound was recorded in OGG, and the video itself was an OGG video. So it was nice to see that, rather than producing an MP3 and MP4, etc. So that was a good start.
Oh, that was a good start, because it was a good job you managed to get it done, because I've had real problems recording videos on Linux. I have to say it has been a bit of a weak spot. I like Record My Desktop. I have used it, but occasionally I found it didn't work in the way I expected. And in one case, I think I even had to resort to using Jack of all things to get the audio to work, but that was a while ago, so that's probably not relevant now.
Right, and yeah, so that at least got me my video, and after two blimmin' annoying phone calls later, and worst of it was, the reason I'm saying annoying is, of course, when a ringing goes off in the background, you can't really use that one anymore. And the best of it is, there was one person who told me my Windows computer had a virus on it, and another person was trying to sell me PPI insurance or something like that. PPI claims, and I'm like, yeah, clear off, not interested in the slightest. So that annoyed me. But once I had all that, I started to have a wee look at what I can use to start putting this together, because I didn't just want to do it in that rough a format that it just was the start of a video and then it ended with me clicking up at the top. And of course, I wanted to double check to make sure there's nothing else I could do with it. So I had a wee look at video editors. Now, I've heard that this is generally a weak spot on Linux, and I had a look at a few. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I had a look at several, and there's one big discrepancy, I think, one big piece missing here, and that is there doesn't seem to be any that's at middle of the road that I could find. I'm not saying they don't exist, just one of the ones that none that I could find of video editors. They all seem to be either incredibly complicated and essentially unusable for a novice, or they were actually way too simple. And as much as it annoys me, to be honest, but I actually plugged for the simple purely because I thought I want to get this video done in time for TuxCham. The one I went for, which I thought offered the best features, was one called OpenShot Video Editor, which is actually a very common one, which is not very TuxCham-like at all. But I think you said it already. Videos in general on Linux are pretty poor, or should I say video editing stuff. So I thought, if I go for a completely obscure one, I don't know if it'll work, and two, the documentation on it's probably going to be pretty poor and the support will be next to nothing. So that's the reason I went for it in the end, OpenShot. Have you had similar experiences, Andrew?
No, in fact, I've never actually attempted to edit a video ever. I've always chickened out and got somebody else to do it. And it's only recently I've started editing my own audio too. I've always skated around that one as well. So recording my desktop and, you know, sharing a screencast or something like that, yeah, I've done that a lot. But no, I've never actually used any video editing software. I think partly part of the reason I'm put off doing it is because I feel I will discover that I might wish I was in some other operating system that might be a bit more proprietary than Linux. But that said, I know there are good ones on Linux, and I'm sure we're going to get plenty of feedback on this point. So I invite it, in fact. What, you know, if our listeners tell us what they recommend for a complete noob in video editing like me on Linux, please tell me, and I'll give it a go.
Yes, indeed. Well, the one I plumbed for, as I said, was OpenShot, and it opens with just really two tracks, and or two empty tracks, should I say. And it says it invites you to put in audio and video files. So I did that. It kind of reminded me a wee bit of Audacity with the way the tracks and things opened up. However, the one thing that annoyed me was I couldn't find any way. With Audacity, it's very easy to sync up tracks. You know, if you're putting multiple tracks together, it's very, very easy to make sure they line up. I found that very, very difficult. It was a wee bit hit and miss. It allowed me to add titles and things very easily, which I did, and it's a very basic title. I mean, nothing fancy at all. I did try this an option for 3D titles, animated titles, and I tried one of them, and I think after 20 minutes it was still at 0.2%, and I just thought, oh, forget it, I'd have to leave that running overnight. So I just kind of gave up on the animated titles. So I went back and just a normal title, just to introduce the video, and they have fades and different things like that. But again, the way it I don't like the way it places them, because you're just going to place them quite randomly. So I've got to kind of fade out and fade in between my title and the video. Now, the first time I did it, I just did title, fade in, video, that was it, whole video. And I was thinking, okay, right, let's try that. Yeah, that's fine. And then I thought, well, the problem is, you can check this out on Vimeo. The first one is the rather more unedited version, because it just shows me removing the background, and I try and waffle a wee bit, but overall it's quite a boring part. So when I looked at it, I just thought, well, you know, once they get the gist, they don't need to see me doing the rest of it. So then I thought, well, wait a minute, I've seen this with the Minecraft Let's Plays. If somebody says, right, I'm just going to dig straight down and head for bedrock, you know, they don't often just show that. Instead, they either cut it or, and this is my personal preference, was speed it up a bit. So I sped it up, and I tried to just get one segment of the video to speed up, but then I discovered that seemed impossible. I just couldn't do it, not with OpenShot anyway. So this was where it became a wee bit of a problem, because like I said about the accuracy part, I just could not find a way to get them lined up. So what I had to do in the end was, I discovered two ways to actually do this. I can't remember I think it might have been just FFmpeg I used. But initially, I found FFmpeg to be the best way to actually just clip parts off the video. So, and that was just a case of, right, okay, well, I want to take the last, you know, 20 seconds off the video. Just use the command for that. That worked. Because I wanted that completely deleted. There is an option to trim or to remove the last part in OpenShot, but the problem there was it only did it temporarily. If you duplicated that video, it would just add the bit back on, which I got rather annoyed with. So that's what I did there. So I trimmed it down to the bits I wanted to keep. So I got rid of a wee bit at the start when I was kind of clicking about, and then a wee bit at the end where I was just basically stopping the recording. And what I did there was I duplicated the video three times. And the bit that I wanted to cut out, what I did was on the first copy, I just stopped until the bit I wanted to cut out or wanted to speed up. And I stopped the video there. Then on my second copy, I just kept the bit that was just going to be sped up. And then on the third copy, I got rid of everything before the end of the part I want to speed up. So if you understand, I've kind of got three parts now, and I was there trying to line them up with each other. However, even with snap on, though, there's an option to snap, it still did not work very well with a line. I was zooming right in, and I got to the point where I was zooming into stupid. I was seeing kind of nanoseconds, and it was still I was thinking, right, this still isn't snapping anywhere. So that bit really did kind of annoy me a wee bit, but it did work out in the end. Now, when I actually sped up the bit, I put them all together, and I thought, yeah, that's okay, but I think we really need something for this. And the only thing I couldn't get it out of my head at all, was the Benny Hill theme tune. So I just had to use, I think I got it down to something like, there's maybe 10, 12 seconds of sped up video. So I just thought, right, well, that's not Creative Commons, but I just decided I'd use that 12 seconds as fair use. So I happened to just go onto YouTube and find one where it actually says this is YouTube standard licensing. So I had a wee look at that. Yep, that's okay. That allows me to remix this standard license as long as I don't charge for it. So not so sure actually how genuine that YouTube license is, but anyway. So I put that, and when I stuck it all together, I was actually quite happy with it, and I put it all up, and that's the second version of the video. And to be honest, that's the one I'd actually recommend you go and have a look, just more for entertainment value more than anything else, because it does have about, the first one has maybe about 40 to 50 seconds where it's just me clicking the mouse, which probably isn't that much used, or that even that interesting to anybody, unless you really do happen to love watching photo editing.
Indeed. So I was just thinking there, in case we have overseas listeners that are not familiar with Benny Hill, he was a comedian in Britain, primarily famous for having chase scenes speeded up with the music that you'll hear in the video. And usually women were involved as well. Am I remembering that correctly, KV?
Yes, and as it's a family-friendly show, I'll just say women with a... I'll say scantily clad, and that's it. That's all I'm going to say.
Yes, it's kind of comedy that in 1970s, early 80s Britain was absolutely fine, but you'd never see these days. And in fact, I haven't. In fact, YouTube's probably the only place you'd find it now, because nobody'd want to broadcast it. Although it could be quite funny, and somehow it lives on in the culture.
Yeah, if you've ever seen a carry-on film, it's that kind of humour. You know, it's not a... It's certainly not what the internet provides now. It's more kind of... cheeky, let's see. But yeah, so that was what I ended up doing, and the result of it was that what you can go and see on Vimeo, as I said, so check out the show notes for the links. How would I describe my overall experience? Well, I would say record my desktop after I got it working, but that simple thing infuriated me. Just the fact that it was such a simple thing that wouldn't allow me to record anything. But that annoyed me. Apart from that, I was quite happy with it. With OpenShot, I would certainly recommend... It's probably ideal for something along the lines of somebody who's coming over from Windows and wants something that's a change from a replacement for Windows Movie Maker or something like that. It would be great for putting together clips and things or your pictures and sticking together music with it, things like that. That would be utterly fantastic. However, for what I did, chopping and changing the video, it was just a bit too fiddly and a bit too inaccurate. I like things to line up. I like to be able to match things up, and it just didn't offer that for me. So that's the big down point for me. But it, to be fair, it is usable. There are some things with it you can... I'm not saying you can't do anything. You can clip stuff. You can change the speed of the videos. You can set the volume. You know, if you think the volume's too high, too low, you can actually fade in the videos. You can add transitions, things like that. I would quite like to see. Maybe my PC just doesn't have enough go in it. But, you know, I've not got that small a PC. Not that low powered a PC. But I would really like to have seen what those animations look like. So to give you an idea, this my system is... It was too slow, I think, for my system for animations. And my system is a quad-core 3.3, and it's got 8 gig of RAM. So it's not... No, it's not that, certainly not the top of the range, but it's certainly not really that underpowered. But it just shows you how much you're going to need if you want to start playing about with animations.
Yes, and one question that I want to know the answer to is, when the guy phoned you up telling you your Windows computer had a virus, did you say, no, I'm using Linux, but I do wonder if you can help me with my GIMP video?
No, I did not. I wasn't anywhere near that polite to the guy.
Well, I think it's probably time for another tune, don't you think?
Yes, I've probably bored our loyal listeners enough. So, or maybe, or in saying that, maybe not so loyal after that. Guys in Hacker Public Radio are probably saying, oh, clear off, I'm not listening to this clown again. Right then, so we'll probably need a wee bit to wake you up. And this is Model Airplanes with Innocent Love. And hope that woke you up a wee bit after listening to my waffle, so it's time for me to shut up for a wee while. And Andrew is going to talk about, well, I'm not a coder, so I'm not 100% sure. I know it's Python related. I think it's NumPy and SciPy, but don't quote me on that. Anyway, I'm going to hand you over to Andrew, who is, like I said, going to talk about something that is probably going to baffle me completely, so don't be too shocked if you hear me if you hear me interrupting him a few times and saying, what the heck's that?
Yes, thanks, KB. Yes, it's my turn to waffle, and my waffle is going to be about my recent adventures, as KB said, with Python, and in particular NumPy, which is basically modules that add to Python's ability to process numerical data and arrays, and SciPy, which adds in lots of useful functions for doing scientific stuff. Now, I'm not going to go into a huge amount of depth on those, because I don't think we have time, and I don't want to lose too many listeners by going all technical. What impressed me was the adoption that this open source software suite is getting in the scientific community. Now, as regular listeners might know, that I am a scientist myself, and I was many years worked in professional science doing research, and it was in solar physics of the sun. And I haven't done that in the last 10 years, though I still dabble now and again. And recently, I started playing around with Python and NumPy and SciPy analyzing images of comets. Well, it was images of the sun in which comets happen to appear. So I was looking at that. And interesting little nod back to Kevi's segment. The chap who had written the go-to webpage on hunting comets in this way actually recommends, during the article, using GIMP to do some of the image processing. So, you know, another nod in the direction that, you know, these highly technical astrobods really get the whole open source software goodies that are on offer. Now, what I've been looking at this week, though, is something a bit different. Because if you've been looking at the news, especially the science-related news, you might have heard that on Monday, some scientists working on something called the BICEP 2 telescope, which is a telescope that's down in Antarctica, announced that they had found signatures in what's called the cosmic microwave background. And it's the cosmic microwave background is, in a loose sense, you can think of it as the afterglow of the Big Bang that happened right at the start of the universe. And there's been a lot of controversy on this because it's been determined that the early universe suddenly accelerated, expanded extremely rapidly, and then it slowed down and it's carrying on expanding at a slower rate just now. But of course, nobody was around back then to watch this super fast expansion. But what they've seen is evidence of ripples in space-time that were caused back then that were predicted to be seen. Nobody had seen them before, but the theory that was a bit controversial, the theory is called inflation, which adds on to the Big Bang model of the universe, the theory predicts you would see these ripples manifest in the light emitted by the cosmic microwave background from the early phase of our universe. And they found these ripples, not quite as they expected to, but still very similar to what they expected. Now, that's enough astronomy for the moment. But the thing that really impressed me about this was, well, first of all, it was good to see, from my point of view, good to see some decent reporting of the science in the media, at all levels of the media, from mainstream media through to blogs, posts, and, well, I don't follow Twitter, but I know there was probably quite a lot of activity there too. There was a few bits and pieces I would quibble with, like there was no direct detection of gravitational waves. That would be nice if it was, but it wasn't that. I have friends at Glasgow University down the road who work in exactly that, and they would be mighty excited if that was the case. But what actually really impressed me, coming back to the whole openness of it, was that the team, when they published the data, they created a website, and I'll put this in the show notes, but it's bicepkeck.org. And they put everything in a nice simple format on that website. You know, very clean CSS, just data, papers, press release, images, and even a tarball that wraps up all the data and the Python code that you need to run it. So, if there's time, I might put a little screencast video, which will be much more poorly edited than Kevy's effort, of me doing this. But today I downloaded the tarball, untarred it, read a readme, and then typed the Python command, and bingo, within a few minutes it had done the processing, and I had reduced some of the data that came from this BICEP2 experiment. Didn't at this point really understand what the data meant, I have to say, even though I have a background in the subject. This is very specific stuff. But I thought, this is impressive. They've really opened out their data here, and they've made it so somebody who's conversant with Python and has NumPy and SciPy installed, those are the only two requirements to get it to work, they can start work with the data in minutes, even if they don't quite understand what it means. But to be fair, they had links to papers and various levels, all the way from press releases up to highly technical documents that would help you get started if you, well, had a degree in the relevant sciences. So, yeah, no, that was impressive. And if you don't have NumPy and SciPy installed, well, I was working at this in an Ubuntu laptop, so a couple of apt-get installs, apt-get install python-num NumPy, Python, hyphen, SciPy, and bingo, I would have had all the dependencies there and ready. So I have to say, I was really impressed at how they not just used open source software, but opened up all their information for all to see and others to verify.
So with free in the true sense of the word, yeah, that's actually excellent. I mean, that's not just a case of giving the stuff away for free. That's showing everything. So all data, everything, plus the tool, all the tools they used and recommended were all open source. That's excellent to hear.
Yes. The only thing I should say is the Python code didn't have a license on it. It said who'd written it, so implicitly it was copyright to them, but they never actually put a license on it. And that's still quite common in academic circles, is when I talk to academics about licensing software, they haven't a clue. They don't even know how heavily they rely on open source software. But then, to be fair, nor do most people, you know, when they're using an Android phone, for example.
No, well, that's the truth. And I suppose that the point of it is, you know, we can all be preachy at, you know, and we all feel like it at the time, but, you know, average Joe on the street does not care that Linux is open source. You know, they don't care how open anything is. They're wanting the user experience. But, you know, the likes of that, like you were saying in the education part, is especially with lectures and things, the problem there is that if you don't license and don't make it clear, in this day and age where it's so litigious, people will probably just avoid using stuff if there's a grey area. Either that, or if they want to risk it, fine. But, you know, it's I suppose that's somewhere where we really need to educate people of what the licenses are. Because I gave somebody recently, who's actually quite computer-minded, he's quite into computers, I gave somebody a bit recently, and I said, copy this out, get it printed, hand it all out. Oh, you can't, it's copyrighted. No. That stuff's under Creative Commons. You can distribute it as all you want. Just don't sell it. Oh, no, I can't. It's against copyright. I'm going, banging my head off. But, you know, the likes of when people leave it kind of open, I don't know, is there a law in Britain like there is in Germany where everything's copyrighted until it's stated otherwise? Like, if there's no such thing as public domain as such.
There is such a thing as public domain, but it doesn't default to that. So you've got to say, I think the assumption is that the creator of the work owns the copyright, unless you're working for an organisation, a company, in which case it belongs to the company, usually, unless you've got agreement with them to the contrary. So yeah, I think you have to explicitly state it's public domain for it to be public domain in this country.
Yeah, so no, I did. I meant like in Germany. I remember Fab talking to this before on Linux Outlaws. I'm pretty sure he said there is no such thing as public domain in Germany. It has to either be copyright or likes of Creative Commons or whatever. A software under the GPL, etc.
Oh, I see. Yeah, well, that's a good question. I always assumed public domain had a meaning in the UK, but now you come to mention it, I think that's an assumption of mine that needs checking.
Yes, it is. Right, do we have any more stuff for that, or are we going to carry on with that tune? It's up to yourself.
Well, I think we best move on to a tune. And it's a tune named after an amber substance, which is very close to my heart and also Kevy's, although it's spelt wrong in this. It's not the right kind of whiskey. This is Whiskey with an E, Lullaby, featuring Jeanette Robertson, and it's from the album Monometric by Cognitif.
By the way, no, I'm doing fine. On my way. Simple Remedy.
You enjoyed that, and while the track was playing, Kevy and I were discussing what I mentioned at the beginning, that it's spelled with an E, and we both agreed as Scots that it's quite good to have the E in whiskey to show when it's not a proper sort of a whiskey, as in a Scottish whiskey, don't you think, Kevy?
Oh, I would wholeheartedly agree with that, yes indeed. I believe anything outside of Scotland that's been made, any whiskey outside of Scotland is just not the real stuff, you know. I mean, the imitations will be there, but it's not the real stuff. And now that we've lost 90% of our listeners, shall we move on?
Yes, I just like to say that there are some Irish whiskies and a few American ones that I do like, but I have to say I am loyal to my Scottish whiskies. Anyway.
Well, I'd like to say the same thing, but I'd be lying, so.
Okay, no, it's fine to be honest. Now, we've got this next piece is on something called Crow, which is a piece of software developed by somebody who was on Identica now, the Fediverse, called Bijan. And I'd like to wish Bijan a very happy Persian New Year, because he's from Iran and I'm half Iranian, or Iranian, I should say. My mother was from Iran. And I haven't seen Bijan Denting recently, but if you're still out there, Bijan, and you get to hear about this, do say hello to us over in the StatusNet Fediverse. Anyway, Kevy, how did you get on with Crow?
Well, to be honest, I didn't actually hear of it before, so which is odd because I actually subscribe to Bijan as well. But I just actually was typing in thinking, you know, I'm not a big fan of the... I don't mind it, but I prefer having a client. And I discovered this one on GitHub Crow. And I didn't know anything about it. So I didn't actually know it's a web-based client. So it's still in your web. But I just thought, right, let's give this a try. Because there are very few that will actually work for StatusNet. And the few that you can modify a wee bit still keep to Identica's 140 character limit. So it drives me bananas. So I was looking for something and I found this one. Now, it was very simple to install. There's very few dependencies. I had a wee look at it and I can't remember. I think it's just a case of, it's a couple of Python ones. Python pip and Python notify. And I think that's it. And I had both of them installed anyway. And what was the other thing? There was something else. Tornado. Something called a Tornado. So I installed, I don't think I had Tornado actually installed, but I installed that, and then it's a case of just simply running the wee Python script that's there, and it starts to kind of run a server. Oh, before that, there's something else I need to do. You need to go, there's a configuration file, and in that configuration file, you have to edit where it is you want to point to. So by default, it points to Quitter. So you just have to go in there and change Quitter to whatever you're on. So in my case, it was microfragdev.com. So that was just a very quick nano, pseudo nano command, and I changed that, and then had it up and running. Now, it doesn't run like a normal client as such, where you would say a desktop client, because once you actually run the Python command, it says, right, it gives you an address, which is, well, it's different for every time you actually log on, and it says, please open this up in your browser. So you opened up in any browser you want. It's worked for me in Firefox and SeaMonkey. And it just gives you a username password entry. So you type that in and you're greeted with a very nice, simple and clean interface. You've got a kind of greyish bar at the top, which is for your, for obviously to choosing what you want to view. So you've got your home page, your home timeline, the public timeline. You can reply, you can look at your own posts. And from every post, you can then reply, you can retweet, or you can retweet. Ooh, I'm on danger territory there. You can repeat it, or you can favorite it. Now, that's pretty much all it is. But the one thing I did quite like, where it kind of brings it a bit more into your desktop, rather than just being basically a web page, is it does interact with your notifications. So if you get a direct reply, it will notify you through the desktop, which I really did like. The only one thing I would say, I would change that if I could, is that it's when it comes to posting, it's not immediately obvious. I was looking for maybe a wee pen or something, and then I noticed there's in the top left, there's my own user profile, and you click on that. So you can click on that, and then that's it just turns a wee status box comes up. You can type in, it allows you to add things like smileys and things like that. It also gives you a URL shortener, I think it's Bitly as far as I remember, and just click on send, and it works very well. The other thing that I quite liked about it was, and this is what I was doing, was it automatically switches to whatever size you change whatever width you change the browser to. So what I was actually doing was making it be a tab on its own, and then it would just end up looking almost like a desktop interface. Like I said, overall, I was very happy with it. I quite like it. I think I'll keep on using it. The only one oddity I had was that one of the times when I started it up, I don't know why, it's only happened once, it never happened again, was that it loaded up my timeline no problem, but then any other timeline, new posts, didn't go to the top, they went to the bottom, and they started going in reverse order. So as they were coming in, they were actually pushing my oldest ones, kept on pushing them further down, and it made for a really hectic timeline in reading. But I must admit, apart from that, like I said, kudos to the guy. I really did like this. The one thing that I would like to have seen different was, I don't think there was any way of inserting a picture into it. You know, like you can on an awful lot of the clients. There was no way of putting an attachment or anything. So, I mean, no big deal. You can get round that. But those are two things I would say maybe it needs a wee bit of work on. And the ability to insert a picture and the posting, creating a new post, I'd like it to be a different icon rather than just your profile picture, because I don't think that's immediately obvious, personally.
That sounds quite positive and interesting. I have to say, personally, I do almost all my microblogging and social online networking through my phone. So I, apart from a wee dabble with Identicurse and a tiny test of Chocock years ago, I've not really felt the need for anything on my desktop. I'll just use the web browser if I have to. But from what you just described, I think Crow is worth a go. And so you think you'll be using it on a fairly regular basis for a while?
I think so. Yes, I do think so. Like I said, I would actually quite like to maybe get it so that it, right now I, what I do is I open it up in a browser on its own. I leave that browser running completely independently, so there's no more tabs or anything on it. I would like to maybe get to the point where I just maybe write a wee thing so that it opens up on a, on like a browser with absolutely no, how could I describe it? Browser with no decoration or anything. So almost just like an HTML5 kind of application.
I wonder then how much work it would be to get it working in something like Firefox OS.
Well, that was the next thing I was thinking about, purely because I've recently received a Geeks Phone Revolution, and I have been using it, and I really have been missing a client for that, so I'm hoping this will actually work. Although, like I said, not so sure how easy it's going to be to install Python on the Geeks Phone. So I wonder how much work it's going to be. I don't know. I think maybe if you were a coder, you know, like an enterprising coder like yourself now, you know, I think it probably wouldn't be too difficult. But for me, who has no coding experience, I think I'd be quite a struggle.
I have compiled Firefox OS a couple of times, although I've never used it. I've always just sent the builds to Jezra, who then complains bitterly about how not very good his ZTE device is, with some justification. But I suspect, having looked at the build process, that getting Python, the Python bit of it to work, is not trivial at all. It would be quite difficult. I imagine Jezra could comment more upon that too.
Yeah, that's it. Well, maybe we should actually get him onto it. But then again, this is a family show. We might have to kind of lose the family-friendly tag for that one show.
That's fine. We could have a Jezra special edition that gets flagged as this is going to be more interesting language and less family friendly than usual.
Yeah, we might have to. Yeah. I think that would really stand a totally separate thing.
Indeed. So, time for another tune.
Yes, indeed. And as I said, I would wholeheartedly recommend anybody tries that one. So if you can, go check it out. It's the only place I can find. It was on GitHub, so it's not got a website of its own, unless it's just me missing it completely. But then again, maybe I'm just not that observant. Right then, so this is an artist that I'm going to apologize to if she's listening, because I'm going to get this completely wrong. It's Olga Silkova, I'm going to go with that, with I Miss You.
Real and what's awake and dream.
And it was a heavy heart and a tear in the eye that this brings us to the last section of the show. But in saying that, before we actually leave, we do have some feedback, mostly from the Fediverse, to be honest. I don't think I got much on Twitter at all, because I just double-checked, and I don't think so. And as far as emails go, no, I don't care how much wealth you have. I'm not sending you 3,000 so you can give me 2 million back. This seems to be getting regular on my Unseen Studio account, which is probably a good thing, because it just shows Tux Jam's maybe making some headlines. We're starting to get spam mail. Yay!
Yes, spam followers. Well, they're followers of a kind, I suppose.
Well, that's it. You know, so, you know, who knows? If they're taking note, then clearly we're probably appearing on a few more lists. Right then, so the two bits of feedback that I can remember from last month, and that was Chocolom. He was saying that he enjoyed the last show and he was thanking us, and it's always nice to get that. That's very appreciative. And also he suggested, how about the new Android messaging apps like Whisper Systems and TalksIM? I might have a slight problem with that, given my old phone kind of died and I'm currently using Geek's Phone Revolution. So I'm at present on Firefox OS more or less 100%. To be fair, actually, I've got a tablet. Yeah, we could still try that. Maybe just not quite as convenient as it once was.
Yeah, okay, I've still got my Android phone here. I apologise to Chocolom. Thanks for the suggestion, but until I checked today, I completely forgotten he'd made it, though I think I did see it at the time. But yes, that's one to look at. I'm not sure I've ever used any messaging apps before Text Secure. Did I use that for a while? But anyway, let's have a look at them. And also check out some apps on F-Droid that may fit the bill as well. Have a look at that too.
Yes, indeed. And the other person who did a very good job, actually, pointing out, well, he first of all said that there was some fine music and he especially liked Proletar. So that was your choice. So yes, good choice there. And this was R7.
Yeah, I was a bit surprised, but because that started off a number of people in the Fediverse and over in Friendica, where R7 hangs out as well, all saying, ooh, that sounds good, that Proletar stuff. I just assumed it was everyone knew about it and I was the last one to know about it. But it seems to be the other way around. It seems like not that many people have heard of Pool Eater, so, oh well, there you go.
Sadly, it shows a lack of dedication to Jamendo and the Bugcast, because they've played them quite regularly on. So, if you like good music, go check out both these. The Bugcast's a show, and Jamendo is a site where we actually get most of our music from. All of it is released under Creative Commons, so we can't complain. And yes, we've also got a big thank you to R7, who pointed out that we made a mistake in the show notes last time, and we actually put the tracks listing for episode 29 instead of doing the new one for episode 30. And now, as it's yourself, Andrew, who's been doing the tracks, I said it at the time on FragDev, I says, I don't care how many mistakes you make, you're not getting out of doing the show notes.
Yes, I know. I hang my head in shame at attempting that. But in all honesty, I made a cut and paste error. It wasn't deliberate at all, not my attempt to get out of it. Actually, what I did was I looked at the list of tracks that you'd left for Turkish Jam 29, and I put all the work in of copying and pasting, going to the webpage, getting the artist named, and you know, it wasn't a copy and paste thing. I actually rebuilt them all and completely failed to notice while I was doing it that all the tracks were the same as the previous shows, except for the last one, which was my new track, the Pro Leader one. And I for a while I was totally confused as to how I'd done that, but it was Dufferness, you know, nod to the Duffer cast. Yes, it's my Dufferness showing through. But many thanks to R7 for setting me straight on that. An excellent proofreader. If anyone needs the services out there, I highly recommend it.
Yes, indeed. And if you want to actually follow either of those, Chocolom's on microfragdev.com and R7's on indie.im, and he's R7 there. So yeah, I suppose that's one of the slight annoyances actually of Identica being a bit more federated, the old Identiverse, is the fact that it's not so easy just to go and search for somebody, but you can get them in the end. But speaking of searching, if you want to search for ourselves, then well, we've got there. First of all, Unseen Studio has got an account on FragDev on Identica, which I think is now dead as far as I'm concerned. I don't post anything to it, and. It's also got one on Joint Diaspora and Twitter, but those are just announcement sites. Don't have a yarn to us. Somebody actually said that they've replied to us the other day on Twitter, and I says, oh, don't do that. I says, reply to me or Gordon, one or the other, or yourself if you want a response, because nobody really monitors that one. That's just more announcements. So if you want to follow, certainly myself and Andrew are on microfragdev.com, and I am at Kevy, and Andrew is at McNalu. I'm also on diaspora.net.gr and Twitter. On Twitter, I am at Kevy49. So, I'll pass you over to Andrew because he's on various other sites as well.
Yes, I still occasionally check Identica and McNalu there as well, but. You know, probably if you talk to me there, I wouldn't have any way of knowing it unless I happen to see it by chance. Another place that I do like to use is still courtesy of our friend R7, is friend.elsmuscles.net, which is a friendly site, and I'm called McNalu there. And also you'll find R7 there. He's Paul Taylor on that same site, so you can find him there as well. And he's encouraging me to try out Red Matrix, which might make an appearance in an upcoming Tux Jam, if I actually get around to start using it, that is. And you can find a McNalu on Twitter, but there's really no point talking to me there because I don't do anything with Twitter, really.
Yes, and if you want to go down the old-fashioned route of email, then we do have an email, and it is tuxjam@unseenstudio.co.uk. And please, in fact, do, if you feel that, you want to leave us feedback, or maybe you want to suggest a tune, I mean, as long as it's Creative Commons, I don't mind, then, and also as well, an open source application you want us to try. So any of those reasons, or just to say hello. Like I said, the only people I really don't want to see are people who are saying that they are wealthy, that I'm an heir to some wealthy person who's died, and if I'll forward them a few grand, they'll give me millions. Really, I'm not falling for that one. Come on now.
Yes, quite right too. And finally, just another shout out to the nice community that is on HPR. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Maybe we'll do another one sometime, and I plan to do some HPR episodes on my own geeky stuff at some point. Hope you enjoyed the show.
Yes, and if you like it, then we are on unseenstudio.co.uk, and just search there for Tux Jam.
And now we've come to the end of the show. We're going to play out with what Kevy warns me is likely to send you to sleep. That's usually my job, is to come up with a track that will relax you and send you to sleep. He's described it as being slightly Muzaki. I don't think that's the word he used, but I interpreted that. But we'll say it's in the upper echelons of Muzak, which I like. And it's DJ Rostage, The Long Road, from the album Old Letters. So sit back and relax and enjoy that.
And we shall see you on the next Tux Jam. Goodbye.
Been listening to a member of the Unseen Studio podcast network.
You have have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All Binrev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Share Alike, 3.0 license.